go for tomorrow night's big Oklahoma Classics card. And as I've told you, I was in attendance for one. It's a festive night. All the breeders and the owners and the horsemen that contribute and basically make the Oklahoma program what it is. And of course, Remington, fabulous host, and the Oklahoma program, as strong as any regional program in the country. Dale Day, how many of these have you called?
Let's see, Steve. This will be my first one. Would have been in 2004, so whatever that comes out to be, over half.
Wow.
Classics is actually the official reason I was hired on originally at Remington Park in 1993. This is our 30th edition. I was in between gigs. I'd left a sports radio station here in town, but I'd been at Remington covering a lot of things, and they knew me well. And they said, hey, we've got a spot for you to help us out where they're going to do a TV show and try to do publicity on the first Oklahoma Classics. Are you interested? I said, yeah, sure. And, you know, I thought it was going to be like a four-week gig or something like that. And they haven't found the door to push me out yet, so I'm still there.
I love it. The one thing we should, you know, we should include in this, of course, is the TRAO, the Thoroughbred mm-hmm. Racing Association of Oklahoma, that kind of presides helps, you know, just helps everybody that wants to be involved in the game. And I'm looking forward. I'm coming for Springboard Mile in December, and haven't been back. I drove by this summer when we were on Route 66. So we'll be back. We're looking forward to it. And I went through this card, and there's a couple of races. You always get this in regional programs. There's going to be a couple of short priced favorites that most likely win, but there's also some races here, Dale, that are really competitive.
Oh, certainly. I mean, like you said, there's one or two, maybe three of the eight stakes races that looks like there's a lead pipe cinch. Of course, there's nothing cinch in horse racing, as everybody knows, but it usually can swing that way. For instance, just, you know, one without going too long into it, the Classics Distaff Turf for the females, a mile 16th of a turf. Run Sloopy Run is back in that. She won this race last year. Her half-sister won it the 2 years prior to her winning last year, Alternative Slew, and she's heavy favorite in the morning line, 3-5, Louis Q riding Run Sloopy Run for Jesse Overlander. It's a cool story with this horse and the trainer, because Jesse is the son of Randy Overlander, who had trained for years and years at Remington, and also campaigned Alternative Slew. Well, he retired 2 years ago, and he brought his son up underneath and trained and so on and so forth, and just basically handed the operation to him, and Jesse's taken over with great ease and has done well for all the owners that stayed on with the Overlander family. So it's kind of a cool story. You get plenty of stories like that in the State Red Knight, and that's just another one. Mike Jones, the owner, runs Sloopy Run. By the way, Luis Quinones, second all-time at Oklahoma Classics, wins with 21. He wins one race on Friday, and he'll become the second all-time by himself. He's actually tied with Don Pettinger, who retired quite a few years ago. They each have 21 Classics wins. Cliff Berry, who retired in 2015, sits at the top with 26 Classics wins for the local jockeys. So Louis Q still going strong, leading active rider in the series, and one win puts him into second place by himself. So, there's some solid heavy favorites. And the race, there's a couple I'm really looking forward to, but one of them is the Distaff. It only drew 7, and there's a reason why. It's a race number 6 on the night, which begins, by the way, our all-stakes late pick 5. So there's an extra pick 5 for the players on Friday night. One starts in the opening race, and the other one starts in race number 6. But the Distaff draws C.R. Trout's filly, who won the Remington Park Oaks, the Grade 3 event on our Derby undercard. It's Pricey Legacy, so she's going to face older horses, and one of the older horses in there she'll have to deal with is She's All Wool, who won the race last year out of the barn of trainer Donnie Von Hemel. She's a daughter of her mare, her dam, but She's All In, a millionaire Oklahoma bred who's in our Oklahoma Horse Racing Hall of Fame, and she won this Distaff 4 times in her career, in a row, actually. So the pedigree's there, but She's All Wolf, the talented older runner, 5 years old, taking on the upstart 3-year-old for Sierra Trout's Barn, Hit Pricey Legacy. That's going to be an interesting race.
You know, I brought that race up when I was just kind of touching on the theme and mentioning you were joining us today. That horse of Carl Craddock's, of Kerry Craddock's, I always, I don't know why, that's just my gravitate towards saying Carl. The Kachina, I don't think she's impossible in here, and she's certainly an exotic candidate.
Well, that's going to make one of my coworkers very happy, because one of the people in my office, she's the breeder and co-owner of this horse, so that's going to make her excited when I tell her this afternoon that you thought Kachina has a shot. Yeah, Kachina did not embarrass herself, ran third, beat only 5 3/4 behind His Pricey Legacy, an Oklahoma Stallion Philly Division back on September 9, and Kerry Craddock putting her in this race, stepping her up possibly when you have His Pricey Legacy, and then also with Keys All Wolf. But yeah, the horse will get some play. I don't have any doubt about that. Well, it's going to be interesting to see how she fares. Kerry has another one in there that I'm interested to see how she does. And Got to See Red, a daughter, her broodmare was Got to Go, who was a multiple stakes winner in her running time at Remington Park. And last year, this horse ran fourth, kind of was in the mix in the stretch, and then just packed it in. I don't know what happened there, and she hasn't really returned to any great form since. But I keep an eye on the Craddock horses, because Kerry, like many of the trainers with their top Oklahoma Reds, are obviously gearing towards this night. So it should not be a shock to anybody if a horse that hasn't looked good the last couple of races suddenly springs up and does well, because they're reporting for this night. It's one of those few nights for the state breds to get a six-digit purse overall, and a big chunk of that purse if they can cash in and win.
Let's talk about the two-year-olds. There's the two starter races, which I do want to circle back to, Dale, and get some opinions, because both of those races are big, bulky fields, and they look like they could be volatile with, you know, a 4-1 morning line favorite in the opener, and a I think a 4-1, a 7-2, and a 4-1, 12
yeah,
and 13
yeah, and
fields.
The starter races are always tough. They fill, and it's the wild, wild west, basically. If you're going to get a big long shot normally on Classics night, it tends to happen in one of those starter races, one for the females and one for the males. I've not handicapped these races yet, but they're wide open, both of them. And strange things seem to happen. There are 7 furlongs, the longest sprint we can run at Remington Park. It's one of those distances that is the in-between distance. You catch horses coming back down from a mile or more, others moving up from 5.5, 6, and 6.5 furlongs. And that plays an interesting handicapping angle as well. So do not be afraid if your system and handicapping comes up with a nice priced odds horse, at least in the morning line, because strange things do happen in those two races. And that's a key for those, the first pick 5 and the first pick 4, which starts a race 2.
Well, the first of the stakes starts with race 3 at 9:05 Eastern Time, 8:05 Central. The 2-year-olds take center stage in the third and the fourth. The Lassie gets us going with the classic races. And the 5 in here, 5-2 favorite, Do You Want to Dance? This is a Magna graduate filly for Terry Westmeyer that Kerry Craddock trains. Was a first out winner by 8 and is obviously the horse to beat. I thought the horse on the rail for Carlos Padilla was okay. That Smart Oki, the Dense mm-hmm. Legacy, 8-1.
Yeah, both of those will definitely be players. They do want to dance. Kerry Craddock trains that one as well. Impressive first time winner. Handled 5.5 furlongs with ease on September 30th. Drew off in the stretch and probably could have, you know, gone on by more. It's a short sprint debut race, but still, she was very, very impressive. And you mentioned Smart Oki. Carlos Padilla's done a great job with his younger horses this year. Didn't fare so well first time out, and then figured things out. Stayed at 5 furlongs in the second start on September 16th. Also came back in against state breds. Ran an open company 3rd the second weekend of the season. Not an embarrassing effort there. Gaining well and only beat 3/4. Drops in against the Oklahoma breds mid-September and pulled away easily in that final furlong. So both of those interesting players. That is the race, the Lassie, we were expecting to see C.R. Trout's Jackpot Baby, who won the Gaylord for 2-year-olds on the undercard of Oklahoma Derby, and she won so impressively, right. And he was high on this horse, wanting her to come back in this particular race, obviously. Unfortunately, She came out of that race not well. I guess she had a tendon injury. And from talking to CR about a week or so ago, he basically said, yeah, I think we're done. She's going to be going to be broodmare status. But, you know, that's what CR does. He knows he's got, when he has a good one, that was one that produced two solid efforts and then unfortunately didn't come out of the race very well. But he'll hold her and add her to his broodmare band and try to create more down the road. So that was a disappointment because we were looking forward to seeing her in that race. But her not being in the race makes it a little bit more of a handicapping challenge for everybody as well.
I thought of the two races for the two-year-olds, it was the boys' race that was wide open. The Colts and Geldings group, the juvenile, goes as the fourth. And, I mean, there's a couple of horses that might have a little bit of a hint of an edge. One of the interesting scenarios involves the horse that's going to line up outside for Jade Gellner. Ghost Hero is a maiden and certainly was... You know, pretty good getting beat the second time, and I thought in an open race you could do worse than the 10-1 shot on the outside.
Well, and that race was won by Eakley, who's in this field out of post number four, trained by Donnie Von Hamel, the all-time leading trainer on Classics Night with 29 victories in the series. C.R. Trout second with 15 coming into the evening. So big separation between number one and number two, but Eakley, a very sharp performance on that September 30th race, but you mentioned Ghost Hero, yeah, came on, kind of backed up a little bit towards the end, but still a maiden, still figuring things out. And maidens have won these races in the past. It doesn't happen very often, but it does take place occasionally. You mentioned C.R. Trout. He was high on Tonto D'Oro for this race. Tonto runs tonight, actually, at Remington Park, so if you like him the first time, give him another chance. He had a horrible start in his very first career race. Not only was he slow, but he was slow for a reason. He basically broke sideways into his gate door, leaving the starting gate, and he was 10, 12, 15 lengths behind from the get-go. Still made a nice rally. Didn't get in the money, obviously, but still showed the will to compete, and I like seeing that. So if he can get away cleanly tonight, watch out for him. But they were hoping he'd be in this race, but it's okay for CR because he's loaded on these Oklahoma Classics night. Runaway, number three. Won by 15. Now, granted, it was in maiden claim the last time out at 6.5 furlongs in late September, the week prior to our Oklahoma Derby weekend. But that was impressive, and the horse did so easily. I only had to defeat five other runners, but watch out for the CR Trout in the juvenile for the Colts and Geldings. Runaway, super easy winner last time. And you mentioned Carlos Padilla. He's got another one that won by 4+, and just Oki in the juvenile. So a very good race. You can find many ways to go with that one.
We talked about the distaff, and She's All Wolf and Hits Price Legacy, and I've got a little price interest in Kachina. Let's go to the seventh. Here's the distaff sprint, and I didn't have anything super clever here, although Lynn Kleberad with our bet 8-1. I thought is the price, but the two horses, it seems to go through Reagan's Jet for Joe Offalter and on the rail, and Sunday Flashback, speaking of C.R. Trout.
Yeah, and Sunday Flashback handled this race last year, just got up to win it by a head, so trying to make it 2 years in a row. Has not done great so far this season, but C.R., I know you've talked to him many times, he will tend to give his horses the winner off. I mean, he'll go and race over at Oakland as well, but unless they're at the top of their game and still raring to go, he'll decide to back off and wait and fire again late in the summer to get ready for Remington Park and the Oklahoma Classics. And Sunday Flashback's another one he did that with. Ran on the final night of the season last year, won the UC at Stakes for Oklahoma Breds on December 17th on the springboard undercard, and then didn't come back until September this year. Fourth first time out. Next time out against State Bred Allowance Company, finished second, improved position behind Reagan's Jet, who just wired the field in that race, and we'll try to do the same going on from the inside. So keep an eye on the CR Trout horse, as always. Our bet, the Lynn Kleberad horse, number five, could be a contender in here as well, ridden by Luis Quinones. A long shot horse, I fall into this trap all the time with Stormy as Blue, because I've seen this horse, number two, in the seventh race tomorrow night, the Classics Distaff Sprint, have decent performances. Now, she's gone on an age a little bit. She's six, and she hasn't really done it much lately, but I just remember some of her runs earlier in her career, and I'm sure when I finish handicapping, I'll probably put her in my top four somewhere just in case she does decide to run on and get a part of the exotics.
Talk about the boys sprint and the 8th. It's starting to get late in the evening, 11:33 Eastern, 10:33 Central. And I got to say, I understand Shannon C's appeal in here, but second off the layoff, and I don't think by any means Shannon C has to win. I thought Mr. Wayside for Oberlander and Q made sense, and Fly to the Bank. I think this is a quizzical bunch, and I'm reaching for prices here.
And that's probably a good thing to do. The sprint category, there's no welder anymore. So we're still waiting for the next welder to show up. The sprint division for the Okie Breds on Classics Night over the years has usually had a dominant horse in a string of races, usually 2 or 3 years. There was Medium Rare for a few years. There was Okie Ride for a few years. Then there was a welder for a few years. Last year, Shannon C. stepped up. We thought maybe he would take the mantle, but he hasn't really shown that he wants it. Yet, Fly to the Bank was a stakes winner at age 2, inconsistent some since then, a winner last time. Mr. Wayside, very interesting horse, ran 2nd on a 5-furlong turf sprint, and then went on to win back on the main track next time out. So there's another one, like she mentioned, and Luis Quinones gets them out there. Do not discount Salt Creek Kid. Sue Hunt is a small operation. She may have less than a handful of horses in training, and this one is a good one. Salt Creek Kid, usually, not always, because last time went to the front and handled it, winning at 6.5 furlongs, winning by 2 lengths in an allowance event, but has come from way out of it in the past and does so impressively. So the last race shows some versatility, being able to go to the front and then hang on and show the 1-2 up there, something completely different. So do not ignore Salt Creek Kid, who gets David Cabrera, and you could do a lot worse than that.
Well, that gets us to the feature, the Oklahoma Classics Cup, midnight in the east, 12:05 post time, 11:05 Central, and, you know, favorite, That's Something, Ab Soroka for CR, I think is appealing, number one dude for Gary Craddock. Those are your three top choices. I don't know if I've got anything particularly clever to offer in here.
Yeah, Don't Tell Nobody won this race a couple years back. I believe it was in 2020. Sophie Doyle had the call there. Don't Tell Nobody has not won since then, but a past Classics Cup winner. Cowboy Mischief has won Classics Night races in his career, has done it over the turf, and has kind of bounced around trying to find his new niche. Now, age of 6, he's capable of throwing a big race from time to time. And then the others you mentioned, Absaroka, CR was disappointed in his first effort of the season, but I thought he was ready to go. Obviously, he wasn't, but he's hopeful of something better tomorrow night. Number one dude going back and forth, dirt horse winner in the past, ran on the turf last time in the Red Earth on the Derby weekend for Oklahoma Breds on the turf 2 nights prior, and came from off the pace and just got up there. So number one dude right now is possibly one of those next millionaire Oklahoma Breds. She's All Wolf is higher up in rankings and earnings as well, but number one dude is a horse to definitely watch, only age of 4, and by giving that versatility angle, can go turf or main track, is something to absolutely love. But this race, it should come down to one of the three you mentioned, I would think, but for in your exotics, Cowboy Mischief to probably get in the back end of it. Don't Tell Nobody, Danny Caldwell, all-time leading owner at Remington, reclaimed this horse last time out. So basically, and Eddie's done this in the past. He's claimed horses to run in the cup and get it done. Don't Tell Nobody was one of those a few years back. And Fifth Date was a horse years ago who was a sprinter and always seemed to land in the money but didn't seem to win very often. Danny claimed that one and then moved it up and got it around 2 turns to win the cup like 2 or 3 races after he claimed the horse. So obviously his operation, what he does with the claiming runners, he spots them very well. So it's a good race. No heavy cinch in there, but definitely it's interesting. You might be able to catch a little bit of a price on it for sure. And start your late double.
Well, and speaking of the double, there again feels like three obvious players, and they're the morning line favorites. Tap the Dot, The 8 for Asmussen and Stewie Elliott. Quarkey on the outside for Broberg, 4-1 and 5-1. Half hours to keep Alan Dupuy, and 5-1 there with Lane Leslie. There is a price that intrigued me, and I don't think that ran the red light for Mindy Willis is going to have enough of a pace, you know, to impact this in the top slots. But ran the red light is the fun price to use in your exotics.
And Mindy always points towards the turf, and this one has not really shown much so far this season. As a matter of fact, has not hit the board yet. But has only had the one race in State Bred Company. We ran seventh. Beat only four lengths in what was the stampede in the final furlong in that Red Earth on September 23rd. So, you know, could be a nice price. Time to Reply has won turf stakes in the past at Remington Park at long odds, so I'm sure he'll have odds again. Broberg's trained Moorhawk as a player in here. Tap the Dot, who threw a poor race last time in the Red Earth. You have to think that one's going to bounce back and run much, much better, showing his status. And Quirky just ran last Friday night in a 5-furlong sprint, finishing third there. However, prior to that in the Red Earth, was the leader at the furlong pole, and then packed it up and finished fifth, beating a length and a half. So another one who could be a player. And watch out of the Craddock barn, Cola, capable of running a nice race and coming from off the pace. So if the speed sets up, Cola could be a nice prize for you and maybe be able to catch something to help you out.
Well, it's a terrific card, and it should be a fun, if not a long night, certainly, starting at 8:07 Eastern, ending at 12:37.
I think we've got it where we, if you don't want to watch your late night TV shows, we're your place. And exactly. I don't know if Hong Kong or places like that are going yet, but I know some of them will be, and we'll be right there with them. So we should be the last track going to North America, and that's kind of by choice.
Well, it's a festive night at Remington, and you know, everything that you want to know at the website, remingtonpark.com. The Dale Day, of course, in the crow's nest, calling the action. Two pick fours, two pick fives, nice size fields, and plenty of competitive races, and also a couple of spots where you might, you know, tiptoe, lean on a horse to save you some multiples to be able to use a price elsewhere. So, Dale, looking forward to it. I don't know, especially nursing this gold. Don't know if I'll make it to midnight for the late double, but I'll watch as much as I can and watch the replays in the morning.
Strategically planned nap, that is the key.
That's true. That is true. take part. Anybody that's within the distance, get a chance to enjoy what should be a terrific night tomorrow night. Got the Oklahoma Brewery Group. Yep. That's got the Craft Classics. It looks like a fun night.
Yeah, we've got our first beer festival, and it's already received a great response, and people can purchase their tickets online at remagepark.com early if they want to. You don't have to have a ticket, but it kind of helps let the breweries know how much they need to bring. So, but it should be a fun night with that additional party in addition to the great race at Oklahoma Classics.
Dale Day, everybody. Follow Dale, the Dale Day, and follow Remington Park, and cannot wait till December. And on the back end of our Arizona, California trip, we will be there for Springboard Mile.
We'll try to make sure we have nice 80-degree weather for your trip of December. Hopefully that will happen. Probably not, but we can think
about
it.
I don't mind. I adapt to any condition, more or less. Dale, thanks so much.
Great, Steve. Thank you.
Dale Day, folks, and Oklahoma Classics night. I've got to put up my picture and I can tell you officially what year it was now. 2007, the Richter family and their D. Fine Oki, the Burbank five-year-old mare. This was, and she won the classic. And in fact, it was named for us. I didn't realize, I've forgotten that. We called it the Thoroughbred Racing Radio Network Classic. That's great. Oklahoma Classics. The Oklahoma Classic. I think they changed that, right? Yeah, they did. They changed it a couple of years ago from Classic to the Cup. To the Classic Cup. Yeah, Don Pettinger aboard for Donnie K. That's great. I think I was the only person at Remington wearing a tie. No, that's not true. I see a couple other people wearing ties. All right, Dave Hill is going to round out the morning, and looking forward to his thoughts. And I actually put together, I'll send the link. I don't think I sent the link to his column yet this week. I'll do that right now. I did send out, he's excited about, and well, I think there's only two left of Dave's Gamblers shows this season, season two of Gamblers. And this one, I think, is on cards, if I'm not mistaken, right? And I guess he was on a show that he was all excited about, Dave was. So, and yeah, right? Here it is. Where is it? There it is. Texas, Andrew Nemi. Poker is his game. So, as always, Dave digs on the underbelly and finds personalities and stories that you don't see anywhere else. Dave Hill joins us now, and of course the New York Times NFL analysis, and first off week for our man. First negative, but you're still above water. You're one game over 500.
Somehow, yeah. It was a rough week for everybody, I think, for people on our side of the counter anyway. I think the bookmakers did well.
I thought what you wrote introducing this week's action, there was a couple of revelations. And you've been hinting at this as how competitive things have gotten. And now there's some statistics to back it up.
It's a question mark to me about whether or not this parity that we're seeing, and just to explain for folks that have read it, I mean, what I talked about in the column this week is that currently the average differential in scores in the NFL is about 8 points, which is an historical low. I think the previous season-wide low has been 10. So if this keeps up, this may be one of the, you know, most, this may be the most parity we've seen in the NFL in the Super Bowl era. I was talking about how I think that it's a question mark whether or not that parity we're seeing is that teams are really all playing fairly close in level, or if something else is going on, if that point differential is because of some adjustments that are being made. And I think it might be because it might correlate with this other thing I talked about in the column, which is that scoring had been on the rise in the NFL over the last about 10-year period, and really hit a peak in 2020. And I think that defenses now in the last two seasons have been adjusting to what offenses have been doing, which is throwing a lot more, throwing a lot longer, and really going pass heavy. So we're starting to see a correction kind of to that, where defenses are playing more cover two and two safety schemes, and it's bringing the scoring back down. So we've seen this season. There's a lot of low-scoring games. So my point is that narrow differential between scores is because we're not seeing as many scores generally in the NFL. There's a lot fewer touchdowns, which has really been a complaint that fans have had. We've been complaining about terrible games, and when we look at these games that we're saying are terrible, they're games with lots of field goals and not a lot of touchdowns.
And that, I think I sort of hinted, I mean, not really, I didn't really have an angle on this, Dave, but last week, where I mentioned the 2.5, the 3.5 spreads that are, you know, so precarious, and there's more this week.
There are it looks like there's a couple of games that are over a touchdown. There's only one double digit spread this week, and that's the Buccaneers Panthers game, probably because the Panthers are just in such disarray, and they were a big dog last week and couldn't figure out how to cover. Had a shot at it, but didn't cover. So, yeah, I think that you're right. There's the market is correcting. You know, and one of the things I read this past week was that But there's been a lot of unders, which you and I have talked about. You know, the unders have been hitting because of all these low-scoring games. Well, bettors are figuring that out, and the public generally likes to bet overs. They're most sort of historically, overs are much more popular than unders among the public. Last couple of weeks, the public has been betting on unders. We got a 60% clip, so that shows that the public is getting wise to what's happening, which means the market will correct, and they'll bring the totals down. And the spread will come down, too, to sort of reflect what's been happening.
Anything from last week that we should touch on, you know, in terms of, you know, surprises? You know, I know in terms of successes, you have had consistent results with these outright wins, you know, the home dogs.
Yeah, last week the dogs that covered actually came out and won outright. I think the only dog that didn't win outright but covered was the Monday night game where the Broncos covered, depending on what number you got in that, I guess. But, yeah, the rest of them on Sunday, they won outright, and there were some pretty big upsets, right? The Steelers game, probably the most notable one. The Steelers going into that game, that was the biggest biggest dog they had ever been in the their history, home dog ever, and they managed to win the game outright. And, you know, we see there's... Where are they at this week? I mean, the Steelers are they're 7-point underdogs to the Dolphins, so no more 14 points for that team. But yeah, we saw a lot of really crazy upsets last week. I was surprised. I mean, a lot of those teams, I picked them thinking that they would cover, and then they managed to just straight up win. You know, I think we'll continue to see some of that. You know, this is the part of the season where injuries start to really play a big role. You know, we've got some teams where half the damn roster is injured, right? So that can really throw things for a loop in trying to handicap these things.
Well, and what was interesting, one little sidebar, because you and I talked about some of the showcase games from last week, and they both ended up being razor tight. The Chiefs in Buffalo, and that was 3.5. And the Eagles, you shied off the Eagle-Dallas game, but that number was right on the mark, too, the 6.5-7.
It was.
I mean, the Eagles, right? That was, it couldn't have been, you know, this has been a, I suppose, Dave, there's something to be said for focusing, or is there something to be said for focusing on the quality matchups? That are they less volatile than, you know, some of the, you know, some of the sideshow franchise scenarios you mentioned? Carolina,
well, what I think is going on there is that, you know, the point spread is not. It's a product of a sort of market-based price discovery, right? So there's a lot of players that are involved in sort of shaping up that point spread into what it closes at. The opening number, you know, there's some handicapping that goes into that. There's some sort of predictive analysis about what markets have done in the past that goes into hanging that original number. But it really quickly, like within minutes of getting hung, starts to move and get shaped up by money in the market. And so the reason that I think these prime time, or what we're calling showcase matchups, these games between really good teams like the Philly-Dallas game or the Buffalo-Kansas City, and the reason those numbers are so on the money is because it's a much more liquid market, it's a much more active market than, say, you know, some matchup between two losing teams that's in the bunched up with a bunch of other games in the early window on Sunday would be. There's just so much more money being bet on the Buffalo-Kansas City game that the number is going to approach something that's pretty much the 50-50 number. And you're going to see those games, more often than not, will finish within a point of the spread than some of these games where the market's not as liquid.
Well, let's take a look. And I actually, this week, I did something out ahead of this visit. I went through your Week 7 analysis, and I've got the number I've been sort of reacting to, you know, the number that you had to accept when you wrote the piece each week.
Uh-huh.
So I've got that. And there are some significant movements, notably Carolina, who was getting 11.5, and that's down to, or was getting 10. You got 10.5, and it's up to 11.5, it seems. But start out with tonight, as we usually do.
Yeah, I think tonight I'm on the wrong side of that one. I think in the paper, I'm not sure what number I had in the paper this morning.
2.5?
Was it 1.5 or 2? What was it yesterday? I think I bet them at 2.5. I bet New Orleans at 2.5. I think they might have been 1.5 when I wrote the column. And they're already at 3 this morning. So about 8:30 this morning, the market started to move towards the 3. So I'm not getting good value here. I bought too high at 2.5. It's a question now about whether or not I want to like throw good money after bad and bet them at 3, or take a look and see what's happening in that market. But this sort of happened this morning, so I haven't dug into it much. Interestingly enough, on this game tonight, there's some books out there still have a 2. So you could, if you want to middle this game, you can middle this game and take, you know, and lay 2 at one book and take 3 at another and pray for a 1-point game.
Well, New Orleans in at Arizona, and I haven't read the piece yet because I had so much going on this morning, but I do want to read the piece, The Existential Horror of Thursday Night Football.
Yeah, well, I made the joke last week about Amazon sending the sucker back. I mean, the Saints-Cardinals game, you know, the Saints have been putting up points their last couple of games. They put up a lot of points, and so, and the Cardinals, when they're not, you know, when they're at their best, they can put up a lot of points. So we have a, you know, there's an outside chance that we could get a high-scoring game. But let's see what the total is on this game right now. I mean, the market's saying that the game's going to go 44.5.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. And we've got Hopkins back on Arizona, so that'll be interesting to see if Kyler Murray decides he wants to test out the old arm and throw some deep balls to Hopkins. That'll be fun. I'm not sure that Hopkins, though, is the best deep receiver, but it'll be good to see him back in the mix here. You know, the Saints have Dalton under center, and he struggles in prime time historically. So I don't know. I took the points with the Saints. I've got the Cardinals winning it by a point. So I was happy to take the points here. Let's just hope for a good game in prime time.
Turn to Sunday, and are we done with these? Are the London games over? Is that the end?
Yeah,
of that?
We've given London all the games we promised them this season. So everybody's stateside for now. I think there may be some games. There may be like a Mexico game. I'm not sure. There's been a Mexico City game in the past, but no more London games. So we can all sleep on Sunday.
Well, the Eagles, Vikings, Rams, and Bills are all off this week, the byes, and good timing for the Eagles to get Lane Johnson healthy. And I'm sure a lot of people are going to be excited when we do our Christmas music, because I can guarantee you, everybody, you will be listening to the Lane Johnson, Jordan Mailata, Jason Kelce. You're going to hear the Eagle trio and their new Christmas album that is coming out in December. I guarantee it.
You heard it here first.
Exactly. Where do you want to go first? And you know, it feels like you're missing the express train that is the Jets and the Giants, Dave.
Yeah, well, you know, the Jets and the Giants have really, everybody in New York here is very excited about our New York team kicking butt. But the thing is, I think that the I'm just waiting for this for the coach to turn into a pumpkin. You know what I mean? I'm waiting for the clock to strike midnight and you know, the horses turn into mice and the carriage turns into a pumpkin and these teams come back to earth, because you know, even though they continue to win and play well, they're not, they're doing so in games where they're not necessarily, you know, it's not like they're playing at the same level that other teams with similar records to them have. So, you know, I don't know if this is the week they're going to come back to earth, though, because we've got, you know, the Jets against the Broncos and the Giants are playing the Jaguars. And the Jaguars, you know, they started out the season really impressive. They came out 2-1 and looked great, and people really, you know, they just rocketed up everybody's list because of how great they looked. But they've had, they're on a losing streak. I think that Jaguars, I think it's very close here. I picked them in a very narrow, in a very close game where I think they win by maybe 4. And right now, the Giants are only getting 3. And the Jets are playing a Broncos team where the Broncos have really struggled. But I picked the Broncos this week because the thing I noticed from the Monday night game was that the defense just looked incredible, right? So for everything you want to say that's totally fair about Nathaniel Hackett's play calling and, you know, and Russell Wilson's offense, the Denver defense is definitely one of the strongest we've seen in the last couple of weeks. And, I mean, held Justin Herbert to no passing touchdowns, the first time that's ever happened in his career. I mean, the only reason they were able to potentially be in it to win that game was because the defense kept them in it in spite of their offense. So that defense really makes them competitive, and I think will give the Jets a hard time. So I picked against both New York teams this week, although I feel a little more confident about Denver than I do about Jacksonville.
The Bronco Jet game is the lowest point total of the week, 38.
Yeah, another primetime stinker, but it was it was a difficult one to watch. It was tough. I had the Broncos covering and they covered and saved me from what could have been a much bigger disaster this past week. But I also had some money on them winning outright, and you know they had a shot at it, but just couldn't make it happen. I mean, this team is not in any way, shape, or form the team people thought they'd be, and clearly the team the networks and the league thought they would be, because we have not seen the last of the Broncos in primetime. They have, like, I think they still have another 3 or 4 games in primetime this season.
Well, there's, speaking of which, Sunday night game, Pittsburgh and Miami. You already indicated that you're going to take Pittsburgh in a pretty bulbous number. What other game? What games are you most excited about? I'll turn it over to you, rather than feed these to you.
It's okay. Well, the games I'm the most excited about, I mean, I'll tell you the games that I put money on this week. I bet on Tennessee against the Colts here. This is a rematch. This is the second time they've already met this season, which is kind of weird. And last time they met Tennessee was the last team to beat the Colts. They're on a little bit of a streak, and now they're in Tennessee, and I think that Tennessee's going to whoop them again. I think it'll be, you know, I think they'll beat them by multiple scores, honestly. So just having to lay 2 points there, 2.5 I think I laid when I bet it. I think that's it. I like that bet. And I bet on the Seahawks. So the Seahawks are playing the Chargers, who we just talked about having that rough game in Denver. You know, the thing the Seahawks are, that we've been, the sort of book on the Seahawks has been that they're sort of like the Lions. They've had this really impressive offense and this really lackluster defense. So they've had some high scoring games that they've lost. In the last couple of weeks, I think that Seattle's defense is getting it together and playing much better. And definitely, I mean, they had a shutout last week. They're another one of these teams that's figuring out how to mix in these, you know, two deep safety coverages. And if Seattle fixes their defense, I think they're going to be a very competitive team. And I actually think that they're going to play within the spread this week against the Chargers. So, especially given what we saw from the Chargers on Monday night. So I've got the Seahawks plus 6.5. That number may have moved since then. Let me look and see. Seattle's now. No, there's still, you could still get 6.5. Yeah. I took the points with the Niners, the Niners are playing the Chiefs at home, and, you know, both of these teams are coming off of a loss. Niners got upset pretty big time by the Falcons. The Chiefs, we talked about playing the Bills in a big blockbuster game. You know, I see the Niners probably potentially winning this game outright. I think that this is a team that is much better than their record shows, and I think that they've dealt with a lot of injuries this season, but you know, once a lot of their injured players are coming back, Bosa's coming back this week, the defense is getting some players back on the roster, and you know, this might be a get-right game for them. If it's not this week, it'll be next week, but I think the Niners are going to return to form pretty quick. So this week I'm going to try to get some money on them, both with the points and on the money line, and gamble that they're going to do it against the Chiefs, who, you know, had a tough game on Sunday, and show that they can, you know, still they're still one of the best teams in the league, but they're not so dominant that they can go on the road here and lay points on the road, in my opinion. So, and I surprisingly, I actually put real U.S. American dollars, my own money that I earned myself, on the Chicago Bears, and you know, I feel like I'm going to feel like an idiot or a genius after that game, but I just made the power ranking number shows the Patriots winning by about 5. They're laying 8. I was able to get 8. I just felt like 8 was a big number, and I took it.
Yep.
But man, no team looked worse last week than the Chicago Bears. It was sad. It was a sad state of affairs, and I hope that they can correct whatever was wrong there. I think they're going to lose the game. It's just a question of how close can their defense keep them in that game. And this is one where I'm gambling on hopefully a backdoor cover. You know, one of the things I wrote in the column was that Belichick, one of the things that you could see happen in this game is that, you know, it's already been confirmed that Jones is going to play, and he's been out, you know, with this sprain. If they're whooping the Bears' butts pretty good in the fourth quarter, you could see Belichick resting some of these guys, you know, to wait for next week's game against the Jets.
Good point.
And we could see a backdoor cover in the fourth quarter. We might see a nice little Justin Fields drive and a touchdown that might put us within 8. So I bet real money on the Bears. I don't recommend you try this at home.
New Orleans tonight, Tennessee, Jacksonville, Denver, Seattle, San Francisco, and then Monday night, the Bears. There is the Dave Hill 77.
I give you a favorite. I think the Cowboys will cover against the Lions.
All right.
So if you want, anybody wants to bet a favorite, that's a good one.
All right, that's a bonus. Seven points you're given. I don't want to run out of time, Dave.
I don't
want to
give this reputation.
Well, that's all right. Listen, you sometimes you got to eat some chalk. That happens. Two things.
Okay.
Right. The you appeared on a podcast that you advertised, and I saw that you had tweeted out after Robbie Coltrane passed. You sent out that wonderful scene between him and Richard Dreyfuss in "Let It Ride," and then apparently I haven't listened to it yet, but apparently you've talked about it with Dan Delgado.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know if you're familiar with this this podcast or not, but Dan Delgado is doing a podcast where he breaks down the movie "Let It Ride" scene by scene, and he interviewed me for it back in like April, before the podcast had even started. And we were going to talk about the first scene in the movie. I wanted to talk about the Robbie Coltrane scene, so he indulged me. And so my episode only just came out this past week. It's
amazing.
It's incredibly bittersweet and sad that it came out this week after Robbie Coltrane passed away. But so that gives it a little bit of more relevance, I suppose, to reflect on that scene. But yeah, that's by far my favorite scene in that movie, and I talk about it at length in the podcast. But I just think that it's for any of your listeners that are fans of that movie, I feel like that scene is really the apex of the film. It sort of, in that scene, contains everything about the theme of the film that I think is powerful and interesting to me. And we get kind of into it. You know, we talk a lot about that movie, about gambling movies in general, about this sort of, you know, about racetrack and what we find, you know, wonderful and beautiful about the track and the sport and the characters and everything. So it was just a great conversation. I really loved that he was doing this strange project, and I was happy to be able to participate in it. I mean, anybody wants to talk to me for an hour about Let It Ride, you know, I'm game for it anytime.
Well, and of course, one of the real appeals of the movie, Jennifer Tilly has become a big, you know, big card player, and we got about a minute, Dave, to publicize this week's Gamblers episode too.
Yeah, this week is about poker. It's about a guy named Andrew Nemi, who is a poker player, and now he's become a YouTube star. He was the very first poker vlogger on YouTube, and he has spawned thousands of imitators on YouTube. Now poker vlogs are everywhere on YouTube, and he was the first guy. I think he's somebody who kind of started a movement. He now owns a card room is a part owner of a card room down in Texas, and we get into Texas poker a little bit too, but a guy that I really think highly of, and I was excited to get to do an episode on him.
I've already retweeted the Delgado piece, and I'll send out the link to this week's Gamblers. Only one more episode this season. Mm-hmm. Dayville, everybody, and thanks to Dave and to Dale Day and Sean Clancy and Tony Black. Good luck this week, Dave. We'll talk next week, and
good luck,
everybody, this afternoon. Thank you, buddy. And talk to you tomorrow for TwinSpires weekend preview at the races. Good luck, folks. Talk to you in the morning. Let the summertime song.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Beck on Sirius XM Radio.
Here in Pennsylvania, we're proud of our breeding program, the best in North America. But we're also proud to be leaders in this industry. The PA Horse Breeders Association is funding cutting-edge research at Penn Vet into equine health and safety. And we endorse the SAFE Act to help protect the most vulnerable horses. Plus, we're pleased to support the aftercare programs set up by our horsemen's groups. Just a few of the reasons why you should join us in Pennsylvania, the premier place to breed and race.
Who are you betting on? How about an app created specifically for horse racing? NairaBets.